It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome to part two. Part one was yesterday. Let's crack on with the show.
Now then, in the wake of any pandemic, whether it was the Black Death in medieval times or the Spanish flu of 1918 to 1920, there's often a social and also cultural push towards keeping fit. Because, you know, society is spooked at the idea of that much death. So then they're trying to keep sickness at arm's length.
That's interesting.
It's not quite the same, but I think one of the things I remember from lockdown, certainly in the UK, was the success of Joe Wicks.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, he was famous already, but I mean, millions of people were doing his exercise regimes. That was a big part of it. Yeah. Certainly in the first lockdown,
it was the fitness equivalent of that scene in Forrest Gump where all the other shrimping boats are sunk, like in that storm. Like the pandemic, it was looking for a guy who could do a home workout, and there was Joe Wicks. He was the last surviving shrimp boat.
Yeah.
A century ago, in the aftermath of the First World War and the Spanish flu, keeping fit was all the rage. And he had modern technology, and that was used to promote the idea of daily exercise, whether you were at home or in the office. Now, the man at the centre of it all was a guy called Walter Camp, who was an American physical trainer who'd been one of several men drafted into the army to maintain the fitness of troops. And he developed what he called his Daily Dozen, which was a list of 12 exercises that would help people stay fit. Now, at the war's end, obviously, he had all of this material he'd created, these fitness regimes. So he thought, what can I do with this? So there were books, obviously, and newspaper magazine articles. But, you know, that was at a remove from his audience. So he took inspiration from Chicago's Wallace Rogerson. And in 1921, he launched a series of Keep Fit recordings called the Musical Health Builder. And each record, each disc, detailed some of Camp's Daily Dozen.
So this is about 100 years ago?
Yeah, yeah, after the end of the First World War. Now, I had a look at the exercises last night, or some of them, because some people, I wouldn't say that people are still doing Walter Camp's Dirty Dozen, but it leaves quite a legacy as far as sort of personal training goes. And it looks a bit like, you know, when you see footage of youth camps in the 1930s,
yeah,
often in Hitler's Germany, and it'll be like 5,000 teenagers in a field and they're all doing star jumps. Is that the kind of exercise?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
There's no weights, and it doesn't seem to, certainly in the ones I saw, there was no equipment needed. It was all stuff you could do,
okay,
like in your living room. Now then, as I was saying, he sort of was inspired by Wallace Rogerson. Well, Rogerson had got there first. So in 1920, he released his first Keep Fit record called Dictated by Wallace.
That's such a rubbish name. That is so rubbish. Well, how long did it take to come up with that?
It is a terrible name. Yeah. Dictated by Wallace. It does, none of that sounds,
you'd be so embarrassed walking into a record shop and asking for it.
Have you got the latest Dictated by Wallace?
That's exactly right word though, El. It doesn't sound fun.
Yeah.
That's it. It just sounds like just completely joyless, like a sort of like a headmaster or something like that. There's just nothing fun about it whatsoever. Okay.
So the idea, and then he thought, okay, I do need a better name than Dictated by Wallace.
Okay.
So the name he stuck with was Get Thin to Music, right? So the idea was that this series, marketed at women usually, would engender a new wave of keep fit motivation. Now, he had then had subsequent sort of competitors. So the famous boxer, American boxer Gene Tunney, he released a disc in 1927. And Gene Falk, whose lessons in gymnastic motions, they were released in Sweden in 1929. So people are like, well, no need to go to the gym anymore.
Yeah.
So Camp, he declared in a magazine advertising his material around the time it was released, he claimed to have taken inspiration from zoo animals. So in this advert, he said, listen, a civilized man is really an animal in captivity. Perhaps I can learn something about exercise from a captive lion or a tiger up at the zoo in Bronx Park.
Amazing.
There I watched a tiger and found that the big cat in the cage was always stretching and turning and twisting his body, his trunk. He was exercising the very muscles that tend to become weak when an animal is kept in a cage or a man in an office.
Oh, okay. I do understand the sort of the thought process. Understand. I understand the logic, yeah.
And also, you know, it's, I mean, we're talking about the lifestyles of millions of people, but it is unnatural to be sitting at a laptop or at a desk all day.
100%. Absolutely.
You know, so I can see how he would have seen, how he'd have gone to the zoo and thought, well, you know, and looked at how the animals were exercising. Now,
if you had to choose an animal to replicate its sort of movement and exercise, I'm thinking monkey for me. That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking more swinging. I'm thinking ropes on the ceiling and a bit of swinging around the room every day.
Whenever I've got little kittens and they're so lithe and fit and thin and they get into small places, and do what it reminds me of? It reminds me of me on the football pitch, actually, getting out of tight spaces, nutmegging.
Yeah.
I see slugs in the garden. They're so relaxed, just gliding on a trail of their own mucus.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, I wish that was me.
Yeah.
Sitting on a lovely leaf.
Trailing in a trail of my own mucus.
Well, the snails are the ones who are really going for exercise-wise because they're carrying that big backpack around as well, aren't they? That's the thing. That's the weights that they carry around. Very briefly, by the way, the idea of releasing records on this. As someone who has a record player, any movement around my record player makes it skip.
That's such a good
like,
point.
Like, exercising near vinyl point. Is impossible. How
That's
is that working?
Such a good point.
I'd have to be a minimum of 15 metres away from my record player for any sort of exercise-based movement not to completely skip the record.
That is such a good point.
Wallace would dictate you've got to do 10 star jumps. You've got one heavy landing, you've got to do another 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe he tells you what it is and then there's a minute silence where he expects you to go out into the garden to do that thing. And then you come back in again. Okay, here's the next one. And obviously you'll need to go nowhere near the record player each time.
And then you come back in, you hear Wallace go, that wasn't good enough. I just saw that. Have a word with yourself and get back out there, will you?
No, records were just one aspect of this keep fit at home industry. So at the same time as the record companies got involved, radio stations were also looking for content as well. So there were lots of health shows. There would sort of, so that the Daily Dozen and similar material became very regular morning slot across America. Now, in September 22, when a small radio station outside Boston launched its daily setting up exercises, which was probably the first to do so in the USA. So it was an hour-long slot broadcast at 7 a.m., hosted by a physical training instructor from a local institute. And the exercises were broken into three 20-minute periods, so for different audiences. So one slot was for general training, one slot was for those wanting to lose weight, and one slot was for those who were underweight and were keen to bulk up. And the show really caught on, and it was soon imitated around the country, from New York to Los Angeles.
How interesting.
Life insurance companies even offered commercial sponsorship in some places. But it was Camp's Daily Dozen, which became the phrase du jour. No matter who was the presenter in the studio, it was the idea of a dozen exercises being enough. That was the thing that really caught on. So by the 30s, the format had gone
that
international.
That feels like quite a lot, though, doesn't it? 12 exercises a day.
Well, there was the 7-minute fitness app, wasn't there? And that was 12 exercises.
Oh, was it? Okay.
And it was 30, from what I remember, it was 30
seconds.
So quick
reps of things and round, I guess.
30 seconds of an exercise followed by 10 seconds rest, I think. Yeah. Anyway, by the 30s, the format had gone international. So in Japan, took on the status of an absolute craze. So what was called radio gymnastics was first broadcast at 7 a.m. on the 1st of November 1928.
Yeah.
It's not clear that the format would actually take off. The presenter was a military officer called Arichi Egi, and he turned up wearing full uniform, complete with ceremonial sword. And he barked at the microphone, "Attention, I am going to start radio calisthenics now." But then he thought, okay, I need to soften my approach. So the next day he turned up in gym kit.
Okay, yeah.
And radio gymnastics, it was a big success. So it was mass participation, Joe Wicks style, all over the country. Involvement, they reckon, was measured in the millions. Now,
it's a good idea. It's a good idea. That is a good idea.
The thing is, right, in the UK, the one I remember, I'm not quite old enough to remember Mad Lizzie on Good Morning Britain, but I do remember Mr. Motivator.
Mr. Motivator, yeah.
He's my generation. But you had, and there was Jane Fonda.
This generation's Wallace.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that Mad Lizzie started it in the UK, but no, there was a series of Keep Fit talks on BBC Radio in the 20s, but there was no attempt to mimic the American Daily Dozen or the Japanese Radio Taiso, which is what they were calling it, the radio gymnastics. So it was left to independent radio station Radio Normandy to fill the gap in the schedules. And so at 7:45 a.m., 12th of July 1937, that platform, Radio Normandy, launched Laugh and Grow Fit with Joe Murgatroyd, the lad fra Yorkshire, a.k.a. Mark Stone in the presenter's chair.
Joe Murgatroyd is the best name I've ever heard. These guys, terrible marketing.
Laugh and Grow Fit with Joe Murgatroyd, the lad fra Yorkshire, a.k.a. Mark Stone. And he was the presenter. And the BBC held out until 1943 in the September when it added the Daily Dozen to the home service schedules, with Coleman Smith leading the exercises for men and May Brown those for women, all from 7:15 a.m. And the show survived for 2 years till September 45. And then in 1954, BBC TV got in the act with Eileen Fowler.
Yep.
Eileen, it doesn't make you sound like a personal trainer, does it?
No.
If you're called Eileen.
No. Come on, Eileen.
Yeah. She founded the Keep Fit Association in 1956, providing routines devoted especially to busy housewives. And she had a slot on the home service for a similar purpose with a peak audience of 500,000, which is not bad considering it was 6:45 a.m.
Yeah, fair play.
Which is too early.
Yeah.
That is so progressive. I did not see that coming. I would not have expected that.
Yeah, Like I was really surprised as well. Me too.
I wonder if that could work now. Whether it could, like, let's say Ellis, you have a weekly radio show on Five Live, which is a BBC channel here. If the BBC were pushing you to do a fitness slot every morning, just like half an hour of exercises with Ellis, A, do you see potential? B, could you carry it off?
Dictated by Ellis.
Do you think it's the sort of thing that a country could get into? Genuine question. I find it quite intriguing. Maybe it is.
Well, I mean, but the country did, I think, with Joe Wicks.
Yes, like, but Joe Wicks on was radio, huge, I mean. Do you think
not on the radio.
You think that? Okay.
Because there's just better ways. I mean, now, if you did do it, it would have to go hand in hand with the socials, wouldn't it? You'd be for clipping it up and for Insta and Twitter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But
with the socials. Check you out with you.
Yes, I'm young and I'm relevant.
Tossing out those phrases like they're nothing.
I'm going to pitch an idea.
Yeah.
Elle, you can be the representative of the BBC. But hearing about like what they were doing on the radio in the 1920s has made me wish there was like a world service you could tune into that was exactly what they were playing on the world service this day 100 years ago.
That's a good idea.
Wouldn't you love to listen
that
to that?
That's a great idea.
I would have it on all the time.
That's such a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm going to steal that idea.
When we get to 2039 to 2045, I might maybe leave. I might not listen during that
period. Oh, I think that would be fascinating.
Yeah, that would be fascinating. Yeah. Now you know how it turns out.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
They didn't know how it would turn out, yeah.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive help supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
So I'm going to tell you all about the rise of vegetarianism in the 19th and 20th centuries. Now, we know that in certain cultures and religions, some foods are considered taboo and not necessarily for reasons of health and hygiene. Most famously in India, not a lot of beef is getting eaten because the cow is seen as sacred there. In the 19th century, a new movement emerged which promoted a diet totally devoid of meat. Here come the vegetarians. So I've actually tried to cut down on meat recently. In fact, only the day before yesterday, I had a vegan sausage.
Nice. How was that?
Which tasted suspiciously like a saveloy.
Ah.
And if you ask me what's in a saveloy, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know what that
and
red leather
is. And that's the excitement of it all, isn't it?
I don't think anyone knows. And I would love to meet the person responsible for the red leather bit.
Can I quickly introduce a new section of the show, which is called What's Your Favourite Sausage? I would like to say my favourite sausage is the battered sausage from a fish and chip shop. There you go. Elle, would you like to say, what's your favourite sausage?
A Cumberland.
Really?
From a good quality newsagent.
A curly, like fully curled Cumberland.
Like the ones in Wimpy.
Yeah, or like a shortened Cumberland. Like a normal
length Cumberland.
Cumberland.
The shortened Cumberland. Because the curliness, actually, I find quite weird.
And Chris?
So a sort of,
what's your favourite sausage?
No, hang on, I want to know more. Don't move on from that.
Sorry, back to Ellis. Continue with your favourite sausage. Back to your favourite sausage. Go on, Al.
Yeah, I would just say just that. Yeah, you know, but from those post offices that sell food as well, as well as birthday cards.
He didn't have anything else on his favourite sausage.
Those post offices where you can send something special delivery and get a lovely curly sausage.
What about you, Chris?
So I love battered sausage beyond even battered fish.
Yeah.
If it was up to me, it'd be called battered sausage and chips shops.
Yeah.
You know, the fish is an afterthought.
I used to do a lame thing. Check this out. This is so tragic. When Claire and I would get fish and chips and I'd go and collect it, I'd come back home and I'd always say, oh no, there's a mistake. They've also added a battered sausage. And after the third or fourth time I did that, Claire went, I obviously know you're buying the battered sausage. What are you trying to do? But I was so embarrassed about the fact I was adding an additional side sausage.
This battered sausage chaser.
We do a thing called, on the Ellis and Joshua, called Cool Club.
Yeah.
Where you've got to suggest something that you think is cool and we put it into the Cool Club.
Yeah.
And I think the entry for week one was having a battered sausage whilst you're waiting for your fish and chips. So you're not alone, Tom. You're not alone.
Well, look, some people throughout history have turned the other cheek to eating meat. There's a lots of famous vegetarians. Would you like to name some of the big ones from history?
Saint David, patron saint of Wales, was a vegetarian 1,500 years ago. I mean, the big one is Hitler, isn't it?
No, that's there we go.
Was he really?
There we go.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
the big
Hitler.
One.
I did not know that.
Hitler, a famous vegetarian. Do you want a few more? Pythagoras, Albert Einstein, Nikola Tesla, Paul McCartney,
Morrissey.
Mahatma Gandhi. Morrissey. Do you remember a funny thing about Mahatma Gandhi? The local Indian where I grew up in Gants Hill was called Mahatma Gandhi. And so I grew up thinking Mahatma Gandhi was the owner of an Indian restaurant.
In Wanstead.
And it wasn't until I saw the film Gandhi when I was about 18... that I realised he was a historical figure.
I really hope.
And not the proprietor of a very average Indian restaurant in Gans Hill.
As you were settling down to watch that film the first time, you thought, I can't believe they've made a film on this guy. I'm so excited to hear the backstory.
That's so funny, man. That's hilarious.
I was like, surely this film's going to be about the franchise of Indian restaurants and how he came to find himself in East London.
Oh, my God, that's so funny. Bloody hell.
Even in my head, when I think of Mahatma Gandhi, I think of the Indian
A Hollywood,
more than
a
the man.
Feature-length movie about an Indian restaurant in Gants Hill, East London.
Which, incidentally, I would watch. It's absolutely the sort of thing I would watch.
God.
Now, it's interesting with vegetarians, because I would even say in Essex in the 80s and early 90s, vegetarians were treated with a great kind of suspicion.
I think
it would have been really hard to be a vegetarian. Like, only the other day I was looking at one of the menus for... I was trying to remember what a Burnie Inn would have served in the 80s and 90s, and I Googled what a menu looked like. There were no vegetarian options.
No.
Everything came
with
meat.
It was chips, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You would just eat the chips. Like, I know a few 80s vegetarians. Josh Widdicombe, an 80s vegetarian.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's never eaten meat in his life, and... it was so difficult.
Well, there's still some countries, Elle, on that, that it's like that. So Josh and I were out in Rio for the Paralympics, a couple of Paralympics ago. And in Brazil, there's like just no options. But it was just a nightmare for him. Everywhere you went, and they couldn't understand. He'd like a vegetarian salad, and the salad would genuinely turn up with bacon in it. Like, there was and that's not a lie. They'd be like, oh no, you're so vegetarian, you don't even want these tiny bits of meat. It was just confusion. They couldn't accept it as an idea.
Until recently, even France was bad
for
vegetarians.
Absolutely. Yeah. Completely.
I mean, Brazil is just like a big steakhouse, isn't it, really? Anywhere in South America, just to cast wide aspersions.
they should make a film
the whole
about
continent.
It.
There was a bar that we went to regularly with the team when we were working out in Rio, which was, it was a supermarket, like half a supermarket, but just meat. Everything was full of meat. That's all it was.
Meats are us.
And you would go and pick out the piece of meat you wanted, and you take it out front where there were tables and a bar and a grill, and you'd give the bit of meat you bought from the supermarket, and it was entirely meat, to the grill guy. He would cook your meat and bring it to your table where everyone was drinking beers. And this is one of the most popular, like nightclub level popular, just hundreds of people just sat out there drinking, and you just go, people would just wander in, go and pick a sausage, come back out, give it to the guy, they bring it to your table. And that's literally what it was. And this is all across Brazil. These are huge, these places.
Wow.
It's like how people go out, how people get drunk. They just drink, they eat meat throughout their night out.
So we've established how difficult vegetarianism is, like, even now in some countries. But so it's mind-boggling to me that, like, in the 19th century, and obviously before, but we're going to start in the 19th century, there were those really celebrating alternative diets, specifically vegetarianism. And Lord Byron famously was one. And he also would, like, in terms of alternative diets, had this thing where he would drink vinegar diluted with water to maintain his slim build and pale complexion.
Wow.
That's not a health thing I've ever heard of. And of course, Lord Byron died in Greece at the age of 36 after two bouts of bloodletting weakened him further from his flu-like illness. Another bad mark for bloodletting there.
When I was growing up, my dad used to make our ketchup go further by... when it got halfway down the bottle, he would fill it up with vinegar.
Yes. Yeah. Really?
Yeah, that's what he would do. So he would fill it. Is that what they used to do in your house as well?
No, but I remember this. Yeah.
Yeah. So he would then fill it back up to like three quarters, be with vinegar, and mix it all around again. So from halfway through a bottle, our ketchup became incredibly acidic.
Well, apple cider vinegar is very good for you, isn't it? But yeah. Byron, I mean, he lived till he was 36, so let's not, don't get the sarsens out.
Yeah. While you're waiting for your fish and chips in the chip shop, do not be pouring vinegar down your throat.
Big glug of sarsens for health reasons.
If you need some sustenance while you're waiting, go battered sausage all day long. His friend, Percy Shelley, took vegetarianism somewhat more seriously and began composing an essay vindicating what he called a natural diet in the autumn of 1812. And Percy Shelley's wife, Mary Shelley's creation, Frankenstein's monster, followed a similar diet. Frankenstein's monster may well have been vegetarian because he told Victor Frankenstein that acorns and berries afford me sufficient nourishment. So Frankenstein's monster, vegetarianism, that caught on. The bolt in the neck, less so. That's a shame. Percy Shelley was convinced that a meat-based diet was responsible for many of the ills in society and that animal flesh was at the root of criminality and violence. To make society healthy again, he said, it needs to abandon a carnivorous diet. And Shelley wasn't the only high-profile proponent of vegetarianism at the time. Many people before him, some of which we touched on, were kind of plant-based. William Shakespeare.
Interesting.
Leonardo da Vinci. Sir Isaac Newton.
Shakespeare was plant-based.
Apparently, wow. William Shakespeare, Leonardo da Vinci, Sir Isaac Newton, before Percy Shelley, maintained a vegetarian diet.
Well, that's really interesting.
Plant-based. By the end of the 19th century, Britain was home to a fully-fledged vegetarian society which published magazines and cookbooks. But it was a writer and boxer who proved to be the greatest proponents of the time of vegetarianism. Leo Tolstoy and Pontypridd-born world champion Freddie Welsh.
Freddie Welsh? Freddie Welsh was vegetarian, was he? I was actually looking at photos of Freddie Welsh online last night because that is how I unwind.
I was thinking, like, Pontypridd-born world champion coming from Wales being called Freddie Welsh, that is like Johnny English, like the English equivalent of that.
Well, I think that was his sort of boxing name because he was born Frederick Thomas and he moved to America. He was born in Pontypridd and then he moved. He was nicknamed the Welsh Wizard. And then he moved to America to make a name for himself as a boxer. So he turned professional in Philadelphia when he was about 20 or 19 or 20, I think. Good old Freddie Welsh.
I didn't know anything about Freddie Welsh. I didn't know anything about him, so I'm going to go into his vegetarianism. But let me start with Tolstoy. He turned vegetarian in the 1880s, becoming a strict plant eater from 1890 until his death 20 years later. He argued in favour of the diet for moral and ethical reasons, contending that you have to totally abstain from violence, and that meant not eating any kind of meat. And he would later abandon eggs on this basis too. So he saw, like, the death of animals as violence and that you were kind of partaking in violence if you ate any kind of meat or eggs as well. Which is interesting given that one of the most famous proponents of vegetarianism, Hitler, obviously didn't share this view. Hitler, like, violence and vegetarianism very much hand in hand in his eyes.
So do they know why Hitler was vegetarian? They don't.
I don't actually know that.
Okay, yeah, that's really interesting.
I think it would have been for reasons of health.
Yeah, you're right, because it doesn't feel like it would land in some kind of moral place. It wouldn't, like, be, you know, you'd imagine, but I don't know. Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some ethical concerns. Can't be espousing
this. Exactly. Yeah, the ethical concerns of Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think that's a thing. But Tolstoy's vegetarianism was in effect about the health and well-being of society as a whole. Freddie Welsh, however, the Welsh wizard, he adopted a vegetarian diet for entirely different reasons. Not because he was overly concerned with animal welfare or pacifism. Welsh regarded being plant-based as a superior route to physical fitness and suppleness in the boxing ring. As he put it, the only way to keep fit is to lead a natural life.
Oh.
So he had come to this view through the physical culture through the movements led by Eugene Sandow in the UK and Bernard McFadden. There's that man again, friend of the show. In the USA, they offered this kind of vision of physical fitness that included vegetarianism. And Freddie, having bought into it, he turned a vegetarian and his wife Fanny did as well. And they were kind of like the plant-based power couple of the day.
Were they really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. At the peak, I actually looked at Freddie Welsh's Wikipedia just before this, and there is a whole section on his vegetarianism. At the peak of his boxing career, 1907 to 1917, he was easily the most famous vegetarian sporting celebrity in the world.
Was he?
Only one of a few boxers to ever adhere to the diet, aside from Brazilian bantamweight Eder Joffre, who turned vegetarian about a year before his professional debut in the ring in 1957. One of Welsh's main rivals was Ad Wolgast, who made a virtue of eating the finest steaks during training and boasting about his kind of red-blooded diet in the press.
I remember, who was it who Conor McGregor thought was a vegetarian or a vegan, and Conor McGregor did the same thing in press conferences. He would make a virtue of his meat-eating. I mean, now, because they think that vegan diets reduce inflammation, I think it's more common. A lot of footballers have switched to vegan diets.
Oh, really?
And David Hay was a vegan at the end of his boxing career, I think, because he thought it made him recover more quickly.
Really interesting. Elle, have you heard of the Liver King?
I was briefly obsessed with the Liver King.
You would have heard of him.
I couldn't get enough of the Liver King.
So, Tom, I don't know. I'm guessing you haven't heard of your Liver King.
Who's the Liver King? Who's the Liver King?
The Liver King.
What an absolute plonker, the Liver King.
An American kind of fitness influencer who was a proponent of a like almost entirely meat-based diet, and he was absolutely ripped. He looked insane.
Because he was on steroids. Right. He was so obviously on steroids.
Turns out it's because he was pumped full of steroids.
Okay.
But he claimed it was like eating liver and just purely eating meat made him really strong. In leaked emails, it turned out he was pumped full of every kind of steroid imaginable.
And also he was claiming that he was eating raw liver.
Yes.
And that it was like our ancestors would have done thousands of years ago. And he was like, I don't have central heating. I sleep on a bed of wooden slats and my kids do the same. And he's like, well, I can't wait for social services to hear about this.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is how I look so great because everything I do is natural. I just eat raw liver. I don't even cook it because ovens are unnatural. And I don't wear clothes because clothes are unnatural. And I just take loads and loads of steroids, but I'm not going to mention those in my videos.
And can I guess, is there a chance that sort of disillusioned, slightly problematic young men absolutely loved him?
Yes.
Oh, okay, right. Yeah.
All day
That's
long.
That's his ballpark. Got yeah. Him. Okay.
And I've seen them all because I just...
You are one of those men.
Yeah. When I used to see the Liver King, I was like, well, this is what I must be doing wrong. I'm not eating enough fresh raw liver.
Yeah.
No, it's the roids.
I cannot wait to text Liver King videos to Tom now. This is what you need to be doing, man, in the writer's room.
I still have almost PTSD level flashbacks to eating liver in primary school lunch. My mum didn't send me in with liver. It wasn't my packed lunch. As in, that was what was served at my school. But I remember eating liver and the iron taste of it, and I just horrendous memories of that.
Until I was about 17, I realised what it was. My favourite sandwich was liver, sausage and cucumber.
Really?
And then I was like, hang on, it's what? And I like couldn't eat it again. Same with black pudding.
Your Cockney upbringing.
Yeah.
When I talk to you, it's like you're about 100 years older than you actually are. Yeah, my favourite sandwich when I was growing up. Yeah.
Lovely bit of dripping on toast, liver sausage.
Lovely, tripe and dripping. Oh, yeah. Liver and cucumber.
Can you even get liver sausage anymore?
Lovely bit of liver and cucumber around the fire. Then Grandad would get out the bathtub and then we'd all get in.
Under candlelight, washing yourself in the tub in the middle of the living room. Lovely.
Then Dad would come back from his chimney sweeping. He'd get in the bath last because he was obviously the muckiest of us all.
Until the age of 18, Chris, would you say that liver sausage was your favourite sausage? Would you have said that or not?
Yeah, I would have. I would have voted for it.
Yeah.
I would have voted for it. So Ad Wolgast, who was kind of...
Your wife works in the theatre. What does she make of your Cockney upbringing?
I'm almost embarrassed when I introduce her to my own
She works in the music halls, Ellis.
There is such a gap. There is such a gap in lived experience between her family and my own.
Lived experience.
They're like...
Lovely bit of business. Anyway.
Oh, God.
Anyway. It was tripe and dripping, and there was another one.
He used to have dip bread on a Sunday. We'd have a Sunday roast, and you know all the fat that would like drip out of the chicken, and we would all gather around it on the tray with like slices of bread and dip it in it and eat it.
And then sing songs.
that sing songs. And then Uncle Barry get on the,
on the old Joanna. Joanna. You must have loved it when you found an air raid shelter above your garden, Chris. Oh, take your back to...
I opened up the door. It was only a Cockney family, innit?
Come on in, I said.
So come on in, let's have a knee
up. It's in time. I think it's lovely, Chris. So...
Anyway, Ad Waldgast, who was his big rival who ate meat, the Welsh wizard beat him three times in each of their three contests.
There you go.
He says about the vegetarian donut, I found I am stronger, swifter and more enduring. I train on a strict diet of fruit and nuts. And besides them, I eat eggs, salads, macaroni, beans, peas, cheese and a great deal of olive oil, honey and whole wheat bread. That is a good diet, isn't it? The other thing that Freddie would do, which I'll end with this, that he would, he was a big proponent of fletcherizing all his food. Have you heard of this? Nope.
No, what's that?
This is mad. Fletcherizing is the technique of over-masticating food created by Horace Fletcher. Here are the rules. You're going to try this later today? Maybe listeners, you might want to try this.
Oh.
Eat only when you have a good appetite, chew the food into a pulp, and drink the pulp. Do not swallow food.
Oh,
drink
my
sip
God.
By sip. Do not gulp. So you basically... washing everything down with water. You're avoiding tea, coffee, and alcohol. And then when you're eating, get a mouthful of food, pour a load of water in, chew it all up until it's like a liquid, and then swallow the liquid. Drink it sip by sip, do not gulp. The complete opposite of that social media guy who is a big proponent of not chewing your food.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what's his name? I'm obsessed with him as well. He'll just inhale a... Bevo, isn't that his name?
Bevo, that's it.
He will just inhale a curry, not chewing once.
Whole chunks of chicken.
He's worth looking up for listeners who haven't seen Bevo, as Ellis describes. He's a guy who doesn't chew food, who eats it down, and then rates everything out of 10, but everything is always 7 out of 10. That's brilliant, 7 out of 10.
He seems to see chewing as some sort of moral weakness.
Yeah.
It is absolutely mad, Bevo's content. I couldn't believe... The first time I saw a Bevo video, I shouted at Izzy from the bedroom, Izzy, you've got to come and look at this. She was like, she ran up, like, what? What is it? What is it? I said, there's this guy from bloody Kent or something. He doesn't chew his food. She's like, you called me upstairs to watch this.
What a hill to die on. Not chewing your food.
Have you seen the one where he's in an Indian restaurant and he's eating a curry? And I don't know the mechanics, his internal mechanics, but he's chewing, well, he's not chewing, he's swallowing curry, but then laughing at his own audacity and it's flying out of his nose.
The bits of rice are coming out of his nose.
It's absolutely insane.
And obviously because the chunks of food he's eating are so massive, like, you know that thing where you like really have to arch his whole neck to swallow? Have you ever
seen like a snake,
a
bloody
snake, exactly.
Swallowing a boiled egg on the Really Wild show.
Oh, God, it's a living.
What a hill to die on, indeed.
Ellis, I can't stop thinking about what you were saying earlier there about the coolest thing to eat while you're waiting for your fish to be done in a fish and chip shop. What is the least cool thing from a fish and chip shop menu that you could be eating in the queue?
A cup of beans.
I think polystyrene mug of mushy peas or maybe a pickled egg.
Yeah. Slipping curry sauce from a polystyrene. I'm going to have a chip. I'm going to go to the chippy tonight. I've already decided. 9:08 a.m. and that's my tea. Decided.
Perfect.
Right.
Tom, if I caught you sipping from a polystyrene cup of mushy peas, I'd find that less weird than you sipping from a cup of custard.
Yes, agreed.
I'd say mushy peas are my favourite semi-liquid.
All right, that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to get the fourth part to the show, which this week is Lifestyle Choices, plus get both parts in one complete part a week early, bonus episodes every month, ad-free, loads of other good stuff, support the show. You can become an Oh What A Time full-timer, and you can do that by going to ohwhatatime.com. And also, if you're listening on your Apple Podcast app, you can just click on the show and you can see ways to subscribe there. We're also on Spotify if you want to subscribe there. Loads of options, but thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed it, hey, chuck us a 5-star rating. We're definitely not going to stop you. But otherwise, we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye.